So welcome everybody to Upper Hume PCP and Age Friendly Northeast Victoria's conversation today as part of our pre-International Day of Older Persons celebration. So tomorrow is actually the International Day of Older Persons. So we're in a day early, but we thought Thursday was probably better for most people than Friday. I want to begin by acknowledging that we are meeting today on the sovereign land of First Nations people, and that sovereignty coexists with the sovereignty of the Crown. I'm on Pangerang Yorta Yorta country, and I pay my respects to elders past and present. And if you'd like to acknowledge the country that you're standing on, please feel free to do so through the chat function. The Uluru Statement of the Heart is a gift to our nation. And one of the things that it only asks for two things, and one of those things is a voice in the Constitution. And that voice would actually be an age-friendly voice. That would mean that our Constitution itself is age-friendly, because we know that elders in First Nations communities are the keepers of culture, the transmitters of language, of knowledge, of intellect, of deep culture and deep understanding. So that would actually give us our very first age-friendly constitution, which would be an extraordinary event. I'm going to introduce you to James, who's a member of the Age Friendly team, and James has just got a little task he'd like you to do for him. James.
Morning, everyone. Thanks, Kathleen. I thought just as a bit of a warm-up for our discussion today, I might just launch a quick poll just to see what sort of engagement everybody has online and in the sort of behaviors that we like to do online. So there's a little sort of behavior profile, and there's five different options. The first one is it's I'll just launch it so everyone can see. It's a non-user. So the first one is a non-user, which means that you very rarely, if ever, use the internet or go online. So if you're here today, this might be the only time that you're online for the entire month. You might have had somebody help you get online, but this is pretty much the only thing you'll do online the foreseeable future. And then we've got a sampler, which is somebody who doesn't really go online, but you might go online for very specific things very rarely, say doing your tax online, maybe doing a little bit of banking here and there, but you don't really use the internet for anything else other than very rare specific tasks. And then we've got the socializer, which is the person who, you might like to stream movies, you might like to catch up with friends on social media, all those sorts of leisure kind of activities. And you go online fairly regularly to do those sorts of things. But those practical things like banking or doing your tax or interacting with government services, you'd much prefer to do that face-to-face or by the phone or some other means. And then the flip side of that is the pragmatic person who does all their administrative tasks online. And likes to do those processes. But in terms of that socializing, it's really the face-to-face and that real world catching up is what you prefer to do. And then the final option is an enthusiast. So this is the person who's online is life. It's your first point of call for anything that you need to do. You do all your banking, your tax, you talk to people online, you look at the newspapers, find out the news. Watch TV and all those sorts of things online is really a kind of central part of your life. So I thought it'd just be nice to get a sense of where we all sit in the room. So I'll launch this poll now. So that should be coming up, and you should be able to make a choice in one of those options there. So I'll give everyone a few seconds just to self-select where you might be, where you might see yourself.
Hasn't come up for me, James. Have other people got it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting responses.
All right.
If you can't see it for any reason, feel free to drop it into the chat.
I can just sit back and not answer.
So just give everyone a few more seconds. We've got lots of answers coming in. Right, I think that's everyone. Okay, I'll just share the results. I know some people couldn't see it. I think if anyone was on our host's UHP
okay.
account, that's probably why you couldn't see it there. But I'll just share the results. Has that come up for everyone? So we can see here that most of us are enthusiasts. So we all, you know, being online is a real central part of who we are and what we do. And then to a lesser degree, we've got people who are the pragmatic online users. So it's really those practical applications and doing your administrative tasks. That's where your online behavior sits. So thanks everyone. That's just really interesting just to do a bit of a temperature check in the room and see where we're all at. I'll hand back to Kathleen.
Terrific. Thanks, Jane. And thanks everyone for participating. It's my great pleasure now to introduce you to Dr. Jane Barrett, the Secretary General of the International Federation on Aging. Jane's very generously live today. We did suggest she could just send us a clip, but she's coming to us in the evening from Toronto in Canada. So welcome, Jane, and thank you for joining us.
And thank you, Kathleen. It's really a great honour to be invited to an event in Australia. Australia is my home, even though I've been in Canada for 20 years. And so it feels like I'm coming home tonight. So thank you very much for the opportunity. And let me just share some opening remarks about this important event that you have going on today, navigating real world and digital connections. Before I start most of my talks these days, I just reflect that we're doing this virtually in many places in the world because the world is in the middle of an unprecedented pandemic. And the cases to date demonstrate that infectious diseases are really truly part of our environment and our society. And digital connections actually have really helped in many areas. But today, I just want to remember that there's about 219 million people in the world today that have been diagnosed with COVID and about 4.5 million people who have died. And I understand, believe me, living in Toronto, what some of you are experiencing right at this moment. And believe me, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and it is good health and well-being. So just hang in there, will you? So let me just, you know, talk about population aging. And I'll just spend a few minutes reflecting on what it means to be growing older in this world of digital connections. So population aging is a powerful and transforming force that impacts the social health and economic fabric of community and country. And today in the Northeast, we are coming together to celebrate aging, and most importantly, that place where voices of older people have in the vast community come together and been in community and been engaged. The resilience of older people is critical in the process of healing and recovery, as shown multiple times in man-made and humanitarian crises. And I often reflect of the crises of fires in Australia and how community come together, not for themselves, but for each other. Older people can often see the light at the end of the tunnel when younger generations cannot. And this has played out many, many times in rural settings. Digitalization is one of the most powerful drivers and potential enablers of positive change across generations towards healthy aging populations. The pandemic has served as almost a propellant, accelerating the adoption of devices and models and digitalization faster than might have otherwise occurred. Digital access at home and in facilities is now equally critical to our capacity and quality of life, but only if the digital systems and users engage and give voice to the barriers. You know, what many of you may not know tonight is that nearly half of the world's population are not connected. Nearly half are not connected. And some of those who are not connected are living in your environment, in Australia, in your community. The global challenge and urgent call for action to safeguard digital inclusion for older adults is to ensure that nearly half of the world's population has internet connectivity, so that no days are lost opportunities. Ensuring digital inclusion for older adults means overcoming five key barriers: access, installation, knowledge design, and trust. And each one of these, you know, is almost a barrier, but a gateway to opportunities. Providing high-speed, low-cost internet and devices along with installation and support, these are foundational to addressing connectiveness. Consumers need digital literacy programs and update information on relative technology. And I was struck by James's questions and how many of us use the internet on a daily, day-to-day basis. But I, for one, would not have a clue of half of the apps that are sitting on my phone. You know, the technology itself must be inclusively designed for everybody while considering the needs of older adults. People must have confidence that their privacy and personal data will be secured and ethically used. No one entity can solve the challenge alone. But there's another side to digital inclusion that I just want to touch on, and that's about the prevention and management of health conditions. It's increasingly important to ensure digital inclusion for older adults. Vision impairment, joint diseases, hearing impairment, cognitive impairment are some common conditions which can impede the use of digital devices. Yet they can also provide opportunity to access for treatment. And much of this pandemic in Canada, where I live, in Toronto, there are no GP surgeries open. You know, all of the appointments are now made via Zoom or by telephone. And so that is the way of the future. And that's not to say that the face-to-face is not critical, because it is. You know, we need high touch and low tech. We need both of them. So as I come to my closing comments, we can ensure digital inclusion for old adults by stopping ageism. And that's one of the action areas of the UN Decade of Healthy Aging. Age-friendly environments is another, and long-term care and primary integrated care. One in two people globally are ageist against older people. It's a serious barrier to digital inclusion. And we can be part of that change, because ageism, you know, is institutional, it's interpersonal, and it's also self-identifying. Ageism limits the way we think about older people in ICT, the way we frame the problems and the solutions that we find. Not all older people have equal access to technology or the associated health and social benefits, including better mental health, increased physical activity, and more social interactions. And we've seen once again the value of technology, you know, when many aged care facilities have been in lockdown, for all of the right reasons. But the social isolation, the loneliness, the marginalisation of not only older people, but marginalised communities of older prisoners, older migrants, older women, older refugees, older LGBT people, you know, have really benefited from technology in this time, but before the pandemic. Now, the UN Decade of Healthy Ageing is a platform, and I encourage you all to join the Decade Digital platform, and I'll put that in the chat box, because it gives meaning to not only the actions that I've talked about, but also the way that we can influence and shape policy and practice through the enablers, as we are doing tonight, with your voice, your engagement, the research and leadership, and connecting stakeholders. The potential of older persons, you know, is a powerful basis for sustainable development. More than ever, we must listen to their voices and our voices, suggestions and ideas to build more inclusive and age-friendly societies. And my last comment comes from the United Nations Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, who said just a few days ago, "In a world tested to the limit, we must wake up, change course, and unite." Thank you very much, Kathleen, and all that have joined today, for the opportunity to be with you and to really celebrate not only the United Nations International Day of Older Persons, but to be part of your community in Northeast. So thank you very much, and back to you, Kathleen.
Thank you so much, Jane. That was fantastic. We're delighted that you could share those thoughts with us and those reflections, and they really set a wonderful stage for us in our conversation today. So again, my thanks. We'll also, the International Federation on Aging is hosting its annual conference in November this year. It was delayed, as you can imagine. So it's a hybrid conference. We can only go virtually here in Australia. So we'll put a link to the IFA's conference in the chat box, as well as the links to the United Nations Decade of Healthy Aging platform. And it's a really important reminder as well that we are a member state of the World Health Organization. And what we do here in Northeast Victoria, what we do in the state of Victoria, matters for the globe. We're part of the globe. So our work contributes to creating an age-friendly world. And so our conversation reflects on this International Day of Older Persons theme of digital equity. And digital participation in the digital world is now fundamental for us. It's as important as connecting up to power. It's as important as being able to have, you know, access to sewerage, to gas. We need access to the internet. And that access has to be the ability for us to use it. It's not just that it's there, but there's the capacity for all of us to use it, to participate in whatever way we want to in the economic, social, political, cultural world in which we live. Today, we want to think about really that importance of connection and what connection through the digital world means. And as Jane has said, this COVID pandemic has really turbocharged that connection. And it's also meant that that divide between those who can use the internet and its technologies is much greater from those who cannot, for a whole host of reasons. And even when we use the phrase ICT, it becomes a little acronym that we forget, but it means information and communication and the technologies that enable that. And as we know in Northeast Victoria, not just because of the pandemic, but because of floods and the fires that we've lived through, information is a matter of life and death. And communicating clearly in a timely manner is a matter of life and death for us. So communication and getting information is pivotal, but also connecting is pivotal. We are our connection. It's not just a trite thing about having a coffee with someone. It's elemental to who we are as human beings, that we only are who we are because we're connected to others. So that's sort of the themes that we want to talk about today. And we've got three terrific people to have a conversation with about that. So I want to introduce Coral Love, who's joining us today. Coral's been a long time involver of connecting people and sharing information across the community in a number of different roles. Jenny Steer has also had a long involvement with community and is coming to us today from the Digital Hub in Wangaratta, where she works as a volunteer supporting people become digitally connected. And Rod Farr, who's the president of the Albury-Wodonga U3A. And like all community groups, the U3As have had to switch from being face-to-face to digital to hybrid to face-to-face to digital rapidly and quickly as we go in and out of lockdowns. And of course, in a border community, managing and switching between two state governments' public health directives. So I want to start by asking each of them to just speak for a few minutes on what being connected digitally, what ways social connection using digital technologies has meant to them, particularly during the pandemic, but not always. So, Coral, if we start with you, can you tell us a bit about what using digital technologies for social connection has meant for you?
Thanks, Kathleen. Well, I suppose I find it really interesting comparing the digital era of today actually with when I was very involved in land care across Australia back in early 2000. And we'd only just had computers and mobile phones really becoming a big thing by the end of the 1990s, becoming part of mainstream in the workplace. And so with those community groups, there were land care groups, farmer groups, and also environmental groups. And it was just an amazing, like a revolution in a way, with emails and mobiles, how they all of a sudden became connected right across Australia. And so it was a great thing to be able to experience that. And then you move forward to today and the advanced technologies or digital technologies that we have today are huge. Yeah. Far too much there to use. But as I move into this elder era, and I'm finding that, you know,
sometimes you can't see it, it's not there.
It has become a huge tool, really, for meeting my needs at home and meeting my needs, and particularly helpful with through COVID. So I've had a thing flash up on my screen saying that my communication or my link to you is not good. Can you all hear me or not?
Yeah, you go in and out, but we'll manage. We're used to it. It's okay.
Okay, because I can. All right, we'll keep going then. So I certainly continue to experience both the benefits and the challenges of digital technology. Some of the benefits of working with community groups is that, for example, we had Black Saturday fires here in 2009, and afterwards, the community set up a UHF radio network hub, a number of hubs around the district. And that was so that we had ongoing communication all the time in case of another disaster coming through in the future, such as fire. And what we have found that it's very easy communicating with people across the community, across the district, through email, letting them know when we're having a practice session in each summer period and so on. And each household has one of those UHF radios. We have also the local Mudgeegonga Hall, which I've been on that committee for a number of years, only just recently stood down. And we also set up a Facebook page and a community Facebook page. So people get notices of when things are on at the hall, either through that or also we send out emails to all the community members as well. We have noticed though, and this is one of the challenges, I suppose, is that there are always a number of people who aren't on email. And so we've had to work out other ways of being able to connect with those people, generally much older people, but not always. We also, I was a part of the U3A in Myrtleford, had a working group to put together an Italian book on the Italian community in Myrtleford. And
that connection.
I was involved in that. And look, emails, how could you manage without them? That's not jumping into all the new things that are available these days, though.
We'll come to those, Coral.
Going, or do you want to go on to?
Yeah, we'll come to those, Coral, because I'm
can
interested.
Can you still hear me?
We can. Yeah, you're a bit flickery, but that's okay. We're used to it up here. Okay. So we'll come back to what some of those challenges look like and some of the ways that you've addressed those, because I think that's really helpful to think about some of those, both local solutions as always, as well as some of those bigger ones. Okay. So, Jenny, what's digital connection meant to you during this pandemic time and beyond? How has digital technologies helped you?
I've always been an information person, learning it and helping other people learn it. My ideal situation would be have a table with Ask Jenny written on the front of it. And so I took to Google very quickly I am in a situation on a farm near Myrtleford, 360 acres, which I run by myself. About 8 or 9 years ago, my husband died and my kids are at uni. So digital technology has been a lifeline for me. It's also made me get onto Facebook for the first time ever because there was a school reunion coming up and I talked to people that I hadn't spoken to for 38 years mm-hmm. and made that connection back again. So then, of course, that demystified Facebook for me and I stayed on there. And there's some things I'm not that happy about, but it is a connection to people. And using Messenger is a huge part of my connection with my children who are both in Melbourne who can't come and visit me. And I will often send a quick message, say, show me your face, and they'll quickly do a selfie and show it to me. Or on my birthday, we did video chats with funny screen behind me. My son had a goat's head at 1 minute and then we're in a black hole and all sorts of weird, silly things happening. So that connection is a mental health thing. They're reassuring themselves that I'm okay. I'm making sure that I've got a connection with them each day through Messenger, and I keep them up to date with what's happening on the farm and what the dog's doing and all these silly things. So that's a really important thing because I run the farm myself, and I have a friend and sisters who are like, are you out on that tractor? And if they find out I am, they say, let me know when you're home. And then they're sort of my safety support group. So there's all sorts of things. And I, prior to 8 years ago, I think I had a flip phone, and ABC National and the TV were my connection to the outside world, apart from the business that I was running. And that's been a huge difference in that I get my news off ABC News on Facebook. It's all instant. Everything's current, up to date. I keep in touch with my parents, even though I can go and see them. They can't come to me. I do their care, shopping and banking. So I'll update and send photos of the floods on the farm, and they like to see what cattle I've got. And so that's a connection too. So really it is, I'm not out there on my own all the time, but it is a big connection. And that's part of why I like to volunteer at the Hub as well as my working at the Wangaratta Library. It's because I want other people to see what is out there and how they can make connections, whether it's about information or whether it's about other people. So that's my background.
Terrific. So that using technology in a really everyday casual way, you know, sending those dog photos as well as it being a safety mechanism. So, you know, you're reporting in to make sure that you're off the tractor, all's good. So it has a really vital role in a number of different ways.
Yeah. And this is out of my comfort zone because this is my very first Zoom experience. So I've avoided it for the last 2 years, but I've done it now.
You can't get through a COVID pandemic without Zoom.
I almost did. Almost.
You almost did. Rod, over to you. What's a digital connection meant to you?
It's been U3O's saviour. It's U3O's, most of you probably know, is an international movement that concentrates on retired and semi-retired people, you know, generally speaking, over the age of 50. And I describe it as being socialisation for the benefit of physical and mental health through the vehicle of education. And pretty obviously, if we can't connect with people, we can't educate them. So, as I'll tell you later, the trials and tribulations that we've been through, but in that process, we've been able to keep probably 2/3 of our membership actively connected to classes over the past 18 months. So it's been a tremendous boon, mainly because of having 4 or 5 technically competent Zoom masters, as we call them, who assist the tutors or are the tutors in all the subjects that we provide online. So from the point of view of U3A, it has been an absolute winner. In terms of how we've gone about training our members, most of whom were not digitally competent, when we started in Easter 2020. That's been a journey in itself, of course, and of course with the inability in many instances to go to people's homes, whether it be because of the border or whether it be because of lockdown, they're all stories in themselves. From a personal point of view, I obviously use it to connect with my grandkids in Melbourne and my children in Melbourne and Queensland.
I love that you put the grandchildren first, skip that generation.
Okay. I've had enough of the children.
It's one of the problems of a long life. You've got them for so long.
I can no longer influence the three daughters. In fact, I don't think I've ever been able to, but at least the four grandkids still a little bit malleable, if you like. I use the computer quite a bit. I'm a family historian too, so I use it a lot for research there. I started family history research in the 90s, and I've got to tell you, it's all changed since then. So that's where I'm at.
So it's in similar ways to you know, as Jenny described, it's that quick sort of short keeping in touch, but that keeping in touch maintains a much deeper connection, as well as that sort of, you know, getting information, you know, being able to do hobbies, being able to connect, all matter and all are important. Let's just touch on that, how older people made that jump to the digital world. So can you tell us a little bit about, not for too long, Rod, about those Zoom masters and how they supported and worked with those in the U3As that really had been primarily face-to-face connectors and now needed to become digital connectors?
So the four Zoom masters we've got is... the two of them were ex-teachers, one being a librarian, so he was very much into this technology, and the other one actually being an IT consultant, a younger chap who's an ex-engineer and very competent with computers, and the fourth one is just a gentleman in his late 70s who has an interest and an inquisitive interest and had trained himself up to be competent. So what we basically did was say to people, look, if you need assistance, contact us. And we gave that assistance either online where possible. And I tell a couple of lovely stories. You know, you've got someone online, you've finally got them on Zoom, and you say, now, I want you to click on that icon on the top right-hand corner, and you'd see them doing this, and you'd know they were looking at the top left-hand corner.
Rod. I do that all the time.
And of course, the other one I just loved was, you know, now can you click on that icon on the toolbar on the bottom of the screen? Can you click on that icon? And just a moment.
Oh, that's you, Rod.
Yeah.
Can
you click on that icon on the bottom of the screen? Move your cursor to click on, and there's silence for about 20 seconds. Move the cursor. You know, what's the cursor? And you'd think, right, we've got a bit of a way to go here. If that didn't work, we visited their house. People on either side of the border, and so even with the border closure, we were able to visit their house when that was allowed, and we'd actually sit there and help them. The penultimate option was to ask them to get their children to help them, but the ultimate option was get your grandchildren to help you. Always the grandchildren could help them, there's no question about that. So look, as I say, we had last year when we did the stats, we had about 240 out of our 330 members who had regularly been to at least one class during the year. And I think we had 17 classes on Zoom, which most of which were 2 hours weekly. The numbers have dropped off a bit this year. I think it's Zoom fatigue to some extent. But nonetheless, people's technological ability has improved. Some people are still depending on their spouse. I know that, which can be a bit frustrating. And look, the other thing that can be frustrating, obviously, a lot of the information and a lot of the announcements that we make, and of course, because of our having to be so flexible, those announcements are multiple. You know, we're putting out 2 or 3 emails today just regarding return to face-to-face next week, because there's multiple government regulations around return to face-to-face that the members and the COVID masters and the Zoom masters and the tutors all have to be, you know, brought up to speed with. So we're using a lot of email communication, and we have difficulty with people actually who don't access their email. Committee members who don't look at it from 1 week to the
next. And that's always a problem, isn't it? No matter where you go. Jenny, your work, like, you know, Rod set up the Zoom masters of people with good experience who could help teach those who needed those skills. The Digital Hub do that on a daily basis. It's why they're there. Can you tell us a bit about when you're thinking about someone who isn't a regular user of digital technologies or wants to learn more about using digital technologies, how do you begin that process? What are some of the ways in which you can approach that in a really supportive way? Because one of the things we know is that, as Jane touched on, negative attitudes to older people by someone who's coming to help them really doesn't go very far at all.
I like to set them at ease and give them examples of things that my parents have done at the age of 80. My dad's 93 now, but 13 years ago, he was convinced that he could use a laptop. He wrote his memoirs. He knows his way around Word very well now. His connection that he uses his laptop for is he's an information person like me. So open up YouTube, Google, we can have arguments about things happening on the other side of the world. So I gave him that confidence that, of course, you can do that, and I'll be there to help, and other family members, and I'm their IT help. My mother, at the age of 72, 8 years ago, saw me with a tablet, said, "Do you think I'd be able to use that?" And I said, "Of course you can." And she's into emails. She runs out, takes a photo of Dad in the rose garden, attaches it to the emails, sends it off to family. She's embraced that, but that's because I just said, of course you can. I don't know. I don't think you can. What I've found in the Digital Hub is to set people at ease and to give them the examples of my parents because of the age that they started using those devices. And I say often, not rudely, but I often say you're only as good as the patience of the person that's willing to help you. And sometimes family members aren't the right people to do that. Like you said, grandchildren are sometimes better than the actual children. But I still get a lot of older people coming and saying, "Oh, my grandkids said, I've shown you how to do that." And I say to people that I'm not here for you to just learn it the first time I tell you. I don't care if I have to repeat it. I don't care if I have to write down notes for you. The whole object of you coming here for my benefit is to see you go out feeling more confident and little steps. And then they come back and the next thing they want to know is, what are these emojis and how do I add photos to my texts and do you think I can do this? So it's building up a confidence and saying, well, there's nothing stopping you other than, do you really want to? What do you want to do with it? And the one-to-one, which is what we could do here at the Digital Hub to a limited extent of time, but that is a huge thing, that you go at their level, their pace, and if they don't get it, you just speak slow, do it again, get them to do it for you rather than you doing it for them. And all of that just makes it a good experience, and often it's also a personal connection with them as well as getting them connected to the digital world too.
So it's really starting off with that, instilling that attitude, can-do attitude. It is technically, physically possible to do this, but also that it's there for a purpose. that there's a reason, and trying to, I think, trying to, you know, it sounds like you unpick what it is that they want to be doing. That's and it. Then find yes. the reason for that. Mm. Coral, you've had some experience in with a family member in aged care and needing and wanting access to digital technologies. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what you think one of the solutions for the aged care industry is?
I might try off the video. I'll take my video off because it might make the streaming a bit better.
Terrific. Thank you.
Okay. So a couple of different people, actually, my mum and another friend. So my mum, we tried to teach her, and because she had a lot of trouble even learning how to do just emails. And we tried to teach mum, bought a small tablet, tried to teach her how to use it for FaceTime. Like, we were using Messenger and doing face-to-face on Messenger, but she just wasn't able to learn how to do that. She had mini strokes and her memory wasn't good. And so in the end, we had to enlist the support services within that home to be able to come in and actually do the function for her, all the functions she needed to have done in getting the tablet up and going and connecting with people, so that she was able to talk to other people and see other people from a distance, especially ones interstate. Or when we visited, we would take our iPads or tablets in and we would set it up for her so that she could then talk to other people on it and do that FaceTime one-on-one, which was absolutely wonderful. And I've got another person now who's had a major stroke, and much younger person who's now in a home, and his kids have done the same thing, and they've even put up got a special arm put up on his wheelchair so that they can put a tablet on there, and that. And then he has that communication and the FaceTime with his grandchildren and other people, friends. So they ring different people at different times. And I know that goes on everywhere. Like, a lot of people are having to do that because there are a number of older people that just can't manage those things. They just can't remember a lot of the things that you need to know to be able to continue doing those functions. So, yeah, that was just one way.
Yeah, so it needs that broader, it's not just about the older person and their capabilities, but it's also about saying, how do we ensure that there's almost that, what I think of as engineering or, adapting the physical structures of things. So the arm on the wheelchair that will hold an iPad makes an enormous difference to that person being able to use that technology. But you also thought there's a role for bringing staff in specifically for this into aged care facilities.
Absolutely. It's very important, and particularly now with lockdowns, because people are so isolated, and it depends on the rules. We've found in Victoria there are different rules at different aged care homes, and so that makes it a bit more tricky as well. But and one of the issues too, I suppose, is that you can't always have extra people coming in even to provide that sort of service. It almost needs to be a person that works there full time that provides that ongoing service to all the residents. Mm-hmm. That's with aged care. If people are living at home and they are having those problems, or just they don't have the confidence to be able to do things, they are very, very reliant on their family and their friends, number one. For those who are able to get out and more mobile and involved in different local community groups, which would be the next point of call. And U3A comes into this too, because that extends out in towns, out to lots of, I'm sort of talking a bit more at the moment about out in the farming community, but U3A extends out across farming and towns, and there are many other community groups have learning opportunities as well. And that would be a next point of call. I find people deciding that they're going to go and do a course somewhere is way down the track, and a lot of people wouldn't do that. So it needs to be familiar people, familiar places, and then, you know, having that ongoing support. It's not just a one-off thing, because it's that repetition that needs to keep taking place for people to be able to. If I learn a new thing on the computer, might be to do with movie making or whatever, if I haven't done that again within a month, I really need to go back and read the instructions just to start to make sure I know that I'm on the right track with it. So it's that repetition, yeah, and that familiarity and the support and the kindness from people.
Yeah. So again, it's that mix of attitude as well as availability. And I like that you mentioned, you know, instruction books, which are notoriously difficult for most people to even read, and often, yes, online. And, you know, there'll be a 116-page instruction manual that's formatted for, you know, some ridiculous size, which doesn't help. If anyone would like to contribute to the conversation, you're more than welcome to do so. You can either raise your hand or put something in the chat box, and we'll ask you to contribute to the conversation if you like. So if you just want to make a comment, that's fine. You don't necessarily, this is not Q&A. I'm not Virginia. So you're more than welcome to contribute to the conversation by either asking any of our three panelists a question or directing a comment. That would be fine. Rod Correll touched on that role that U3A has as, you know, you're almost a trusted group of elders in a range of communities. When you think about, and you're a learning community, so people come to U3A. I know there's, you, as you said earlier, it's social connection through learning, but it's people who have a desire to continue to learn. What sort of adaptions or what sort of creativity did some of your members make as they made that transition to digital connection? How was it for some of them? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, look, I mean, look, there's individual stories, obviously, of, you know, people who just had no hope and we had to go and help with it. The 84-year-old tutor who, when told that she wasn't allowed to operate out of the facility, said, oh, well, I guess I'll just have to learn how to use a computer, you know, and she did, and she now runs her own Zoom classes and doesn't need the Zoom master to assist her. I think, and I'd agree with Coral, we have had the problem over Christmas when we have an 8-week break, I think, over the Christmas period, all of December and January. You know, the people, a lot of people, including some of our, you know, our tutors, lost the skill and had to relearn that in the first week back. And in fact, even the 3 or 4 week break in the middle of the year, we have the same problem, that if it's not something you're doing all the time, then you just, you know, that skill takes a little while to remember. And I guess it's been described a bit like riding a bike, you know. Once you get on and go the first 20 metres, you remember how to do it. I think that's an important thing, that you've got to realise that if people are using the skill, they've got to keep using it for a while at least, especially if it's the only thing they're doing online. If the only thing they're doing online is doing Zoom. One of the interesting things that we've had happen, I guess, is that some of our classes are now going to stay on Zoom. The obvious ones, like family history on the internet, which is an internet-based class, is going to stay on internet on the Zoom this year, as is two or three others. And the classes that are too large to go back to 20 per space, which we're allowed to go back to on Monday, some of the classes have, 50 registrants in them, and regularly have 35, 40 turning up. They are going to have to stay on Zoom. So we're going to have a mix of Zoom. We also have a mix of hybrid. Earlier in the year, we managed to train the tutors and the Zoom masters and purchase the hardware to actually do hybrid classes where there's face-to-face presentation. and that presentation is being filmed and Zoom to the participants that are at home, which has been extremely handy when the border's been closed, of course. So, look, I think the amount of positive feedback we've had from members has been terrific. There has been a frustrating lack of physical activity. So those classes that involve bird watching, historic walks around Albury Wodonga, air rifle shooting, the things that involve physical activity have often been shut down by the regulations. So it's not just about, you know, intellectual activity as far as 3A is concerned. In fact, many year 3As are centred more on the physical activity, exercise classes and those sorts of things. I think from an individual point of view, there are certain people who take to year 3A and certain people who don't, and it's the same with any group. I'm often intrigued as to how many people are involved in the men's shed in Wodonga, for instance, who wouldn't think of turning up to year 3A in 100 years. It's horses for courses, isn't it, really?
Yeah. We're all different. Tiffany has a question she'd like to ask. Tiffany, are you? Can you unmute yourself? And
yes, sure. Thank you, everybody, for sharing this. I just wondered on your actual experience in the digital hub or through the U3A in supporting people with memory loss or dementia with developing some of those newer skills or refreshing the skills that they already have. I know that there's resources available, but I was just curious about what the experience has been like and whether you have any lessons to share with the group on that.
We've got two or three of our members who verging on a bit of dementia, who are still enjoying it for a socialising point of view, but they have not, I have to be careful about what I say here, I don't believe they have been participating in Zooming unless they've been assisted by a relative to do it. I can think of one instance there, but certainly when we were face to face, in fairness, they're mainly people who have been in U3A and have progressively aged, if you like, rather than come in to use U3A as a brain exercise type process. So that would be my comment about that.
Jenny,
can I help you more, Tiffany, with that?
Yeah. We'll go to Jenny. Jenny, do you want to add anything? Coral's given us some insight into both community dwelling older people with cognitive impairment who do need that repetition and support. So has that been an issue at the hub? Have you come up with some strategies? You just need to unmute. Yep. Fabulous. Everybody does that too, Jenny. Common thing.
Yeah. I haven't actually had to help people that have obviously had dementia. I've had people that have just through nervousness and everything, and they're saying, I'll never remember this, I'll never remember this, which is not the same, obviously, as dementia. But I do write out detailed step-by-step instructions, but I personally haven't had to, in my only the last year that I've been here, volunteering at the hub, I haven't had that experience yet. So
Jenny, what about in trying to make a judgment? I mean, Jane, when she was with us, spoke about, you know, not knowing like most of the apps on her phone alike. You know, one of the things that, you know, for those of us that are a bit older, our way of learning in the past or of judging the quality of something in the past was to either physically see it, to touch it, to hit it, to tap it, you know, to ask our mates, or you were always Holden or always Ford, and or you were always Apple or always non-Apple. How do older people look at making assessments and judgments about either hardware or software or apps? Is that something that you've thought about?
I've noticed that if you are an Apple person from the word go, you think they're the best. And if you're an Android user, well, you can't understand why everybody thinks Apple's so good. I am not across the Apple platform, but I get all the people who come in for Android, they're sent to me. And I don't try to influence people as to if someone said to me what's the best. I said I find Android easier. But I've almost forgot what the question was.
But if someone comes to you and says, I just want to connect with my kids.
Yes.
So for me to connect with my children who are also in Melbourne, you know, one likes Hangouts, one likes Messenger, one likes FaceTime, you know, one I can never email because he, you know, like that's a foreign land. So how do you start to have that conversation about it?
I'm always trying to work out what they feel comfortable with, and I don't try to just walk straight in and say, oh, you can do this. It's what sort of communication do you want to have? And sometimes it is just knowing how to send text messages. And I recently helped a lady who wanted to help her granddaughter learn to crochet, and her daughter's in Melbourne, her granddaughter. And I was actually working in the library, but I kind of cross over between the library and the hub. They're in the same, under the same roof. And I suggested that she had a smartphone, and she said, I don't really know how to use it. And I said, did you know that you can take photos and attach them to text messages? So she was going to send pages of the crocheting book to her granddaughter with the instructions and then phone her, and they were going to talk, connect. So from the first time she walked in, she just wanted a book. And I don't do it bluntly. I just suggest she got her phone out. I showed her where the camera is and how you attach it, and try not to handle her phone much. But she went away thinking, well, I just went in there for a book, and I've worked out an extra little way that I can communicate with my. So it's not, you don't hit them over the head with a sledgehammer. It's kind of give them examples, see their eyes light up a bit, and you go, right, I've got their interest. And you start with something like that. And then she might work up to going, what's that little video picture on the side where in the text or in Messenger? And you go, and then accidentally hit it like some people do. And it's just they're scared. They're very hesitant to touch things, and as opposed to teenagers who just touch everything and everything happens and they're not scared of it. So I just, try to start small, let them know what's available, what they can possibly do. But that lady, she went off going, oh, I can't believe I can do that. So the one with the crocheting book. So it's just,
We've got Amanda Elvis joining us as well. And Amanda wanted to contribute here. Amanda, do you want to unmute yourself and join us? There she is.
Oh, hello, Kathleen. Hello, everyone. Oh, look, I think Jenny just covered off that question. The only thing I was going to add in was in relation to the question about how you support people to choose a device. I've really noticed a strong sort of pattern where people are influenced by their family members. So that's often because they're given hand-me-downs. So we get a lot of people coming in saying, oh, my son gave me this phone. And then they get welded onto that because they feel safe with that brand. So that's another factor influencing. That's all I just wanted to add in there.
And it's interesting because some of the research in the digital space for older people suggests that this notion of hand-me-downs is actually counterproductive because often they're of poorer quality, they're poorly designed, they're designed for the young person who's had them.
That is very evident, Kathleen, and it actually adds to the difficulty of learning because often the updates don't work smoothly, and they're not functioning in the way that makes it easy for somebody to learn, and particularly when people come in with really old equipment, you can see them getting frustrated and you know that if they had the opportunity to learn on a device that was more intuitive and responsive and easy, they would have a whole different experience and it would be, it would lead to probably much better uptake of technology if we weren't starting out older people that don't have that background technology on hand-me-down sort of equipment.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks.
If I could comment on that, Kathleen.
Sure.
One of the big challenges for our Zoom masters was people with telephone, trying to connect to the Zoom classes on telephones and iPads. And of course, whether they're an iPad or a Samsung or whatever, the icons that they need to use are all in different positions. And that's quite a challenge with the different phones and the different tablets. But one of the things that helped us was Pangerang provided, I guess, some training for our some of our people.
So Pangerang is a neighbourhood house.
Yes, the Wangaratta Pangerang neighbourhood house provided training for a number of our people, I think about a dozen of them. Would it have been via the Be Connect program or something like that earlier this year, which was quite successful. Mm. And I think we could probably have another session at that would be well received.
Terrific. Bridie Donnelly, you run a social connection program predominantly. It does a lot of other things as well. Do you just want to have a chat with us about some of the issues that you're experiencing in your work?
Sure. So, I work at Gateway Health and coordinate our Active Rural Communities program, which is a support program for older people. So in non-pandemic times, we meet in groups and do some exercise activities and some social connection activities. But obviously the pandemic's thrown us a few curveballs. So we have been able to adapt to doing some virtual stuff, but it's certainly highlighted some of the inequities in access to technology. So physical access, having a device to use, or access to the internet. So we have a few participants from up the valleys outside of Wang. So internet access can be difficult, but also just the confidence and understanding of how to use technology is difficult. But we've sort of, we also offer the Be Connected program here as well, and have spoken with Pangerang about how we all support the community to develop skills and the confidence, and also the confidence to know which devices people might be able to purchase. And tried to offer things virtually. And we have noticed that the confidence has built a bit, and we've been able to engage with more of our participants over the time. And we do a bit of a mix. So we do some Zoom stuff. We actually have developed a really successful Zoom Tai Chi program where we can set people up. Got a few people with some cognitive issues and a couple with dementia, and connecting with them, as we've been very reliant on their partners or carers to assist with that. But we have had some success in that area. And also just the using the phone. So we've developed a exercise group that just used the phone to do a group phone call and connect and follow some simple exercises in that way. So it's been, people have had to, the staff had to be creative, and participants have had to do a bit of learning, but at least we've been able to maintain some connection for people.
Does that use of phone address some of the inequity for people that don't have the internet connected, can't afford the or are concerned about being online and the safety of being online?
Yeah, it certainly... the reason we didn't focus solely on the visual stuff and the Zoom is for those reasons, and it certainly allowed access for people, whatever the barrier is for them accessing one of the other platforms. It's not as easy, so I guess following instruction without the visual cue can be more difficult for anybody. Mm-hmm. There's also a bit of a safety component, so when we do our exercise programs, they're mostly chair-based exercises and activities, but without having a visual on just being able to check people's safety of their movements and stuff, it's a bit limited. But, yeah, it certainly has an access to connect with people who otherwise couldn't.
Yeah. Because Jackie has also raised the question about safety. Jackie, do you want to speak? One of the things, just before you say, that is really interesting in the ageing space is that older people privilege independence and their families and children privilege safety, and the support system privileges safety. So often this is where there's often a rub with older people really demanding, as they have every right to, their independence and those around them frame the discussion as one of safety. So Jackie, would you like to?
Now, look, I'm just interested to hear what Jenny and Rod and even Coral has been doing to try and, you know, navigate, I guess, the e-safety environment, having people within my family who have certainly been approached by people online and been in vulnerable circumstances. I just wanted to know what resources you could suggest, but know some practical examples of what you've done. And I can see Naomi's dropped a really good e-safety link in there as well, but just how do you navigate that space? Because once you get someone online, it's, you know, thumbs up and it's good. But then how do you kind of carry them through the journey of trying to understand what is something that's not safe to click on and to go down the path of, and who might not be a real person online, and trying to understand how that space is approached from your different angles?
Yeah, not everybody's a winner, are they? Don't press the button. Coral, do you want to add to the conversation here?
Okay. Sorry. Just from some personal experiences with family members, older family members, and also experiences I've had myself, what I say to older family members is, if you're not sure about something, and quite often my mum used to get frightened if something came up and she just didn't understand it, I used to say to her, just turn it off. Same as answering the phone and you get someone trying to sell you something or someone knocking on the door trying to sell you something. But unfortunately, as you all know, the digital era has opened up a plethora of, you know, scams and misinformation and false information and big opportunities for people who are trying to dupe someone. And so I usually say, always ask the family to come and look at it. Don't, if someone's talking to you and or someone's texting you or emailing you or you're on Facebook, on the internet and there's something there coming up on your screen, don't respond. The number one thing is don't respond, because most of the time it's not going to be anyone that you know. And some of it can be quite dangerous too. You can lose money, et cetera, as we all know.
Jenny, is it something that comes up in discussions when older people come for assistance in the hub? You're on mute.
Sorry. That's okay. Often when people come in, a lot of older people, not only older people, have got this idea that phones are to be phones. They're to make phone calls on. Then they might expand out to texting. But once they get to where they have to put Services Victoria apps on their phone, to access that from, say, on an Android device to go into a Play Store, they need an email address. So we have to create a Gmail account for them. That's the first time they've ever had an email address. It's like they feel like they've opened up their door and anybody can come in, kind of thing. So you have to get past that reluctance. And the thing with the secondhand phones we were talking about before, often the sons or daughters will hand the phone to their parents and not give them passwords. And we're trying to go into accounts and do things for them. Anyway, that's another thing. So people accessing the QR codes, MyGov with the medical certificates for vaccination, that's something that they haven't got a choice. There is a phone number you can call to get the certificate if you're not online, but that's their introduction from going from just pure, this is a phone, maybe I'm texting, now I have to have an email account, now I can get emails, and they're not all the ones from people they know. So I'm same with Coral. If it's a link, unless I've told you I'm sending you something where you can see it's from me, anything that lights up blue with an underline or anything, you know, don't click on it until you know it's from a a definite person that you know, all the safety things. But yeah, that they're scared. They're quite reluctant or scared because it does open them up to the outside world. I remember that feeling of the first time I got video messaging and someone, and I didn't really want to accept it, and I did, and then I felt an invasion to my privacy. Mm-hmm. And I can always remember that, and I use that when I'm dealing with people, and just try to reassure them about, yeah, just what Coral said about verifying who it's coming from, and not to click, but not to be scared of it, and to use your family as guinea pigs. If you're scared of emailing and you're not sure how it works, get your daughter or someone to send you emails so that you can reply to them, and just to get familiar with it. And then it's not quite so daunting, and you just information, the more information you've got, the more you can handle the scams and the, and my parents are the same, bombarded phone calls from people. And because they're polite and they think if the phone rings, you have to answer it and you have to speak to people. I said, no, not if they're telling you they're from the tax office and they're going to come and lock you up. You say, if you want to be polite, say no, thank you, hang up. But you're entitled to hang up. So that's the same sort of mentality. They see something on their phone for the first time. It's like, oh, I have to reply. And I go, no, take your hands away from the phone, stand back, read it, and then ask somebody. That's about all.
It points to those really rapid changes in social relationships that have to be made when you've been trained to be polite, when you've been trained to trust. So there's a whole multiple ways in which older people are making those adaptions quite rapidly in ways that we've never had to do before. Michelle wanted to contribute into the conversation. Michelle.
Thank you. I'll be really quick. It's a fascinating conversation, everyone. I've really enjoyed all the tips and strategies. It's been massive, really good. With North, the NEMA organisation, which is the Northeast Multicultural Association, there was a trial of trying to connect people, because we all know that in regional Victoria, distance is a huge factor to try and overcome, as well as everything else that's happening. But also, I think overseas sort of conversations, it's digital technology has brought the world in and the world out in lots of ways. And so people have connected with something I think Bridie was saying about a group where they were doing some yoga, and it was a particular style of yoga, and the Indian community in particular were very interested in this yoga, and also sent links to their families in parts of India as well. So they were doing the yoga together, and that blew my mind. I just thought that was absolutely massive. So there's some amazing things happening, but like you're saying, Kathleen, it's the process of learning what it is people want to learn. You know, the technology is just advancing and changing all the time, and then the sort of safety with it as well. One of the things that came out just recently with the COVID, massive COVID increase that happened in Shepparton just recently, I believe that the Aboriginal community, one of the things that worked really well for them was the use of the smartphones and the cell phones to communicate with each other. And the thing that I always miss just with technology is that face-to-face contact. So one of the best ways of having people vaccinated and to understand was a combination of still turning up, like outreach as well, that doesn't always happen with technology, but maybe some of that stuff might in the future. So I just like to put a sort of spin on the fact that some communities still really like the face-to-face contact. And I certainly miss it. You know, it's that heart-to-heart stuff. And I just haven't quite worked out how Zoomy does that yet. And if anyone's got any tips for me, let me know, being a feeling person. But anyway,
I haven't hugged my kids or my grandkids for a long time, so believe me,
So I'm not sure what's coming, but who knows.
I think, Michelle, your comments about cultural and linguistically diverse communities is an interesting one, because they've often been at the forefront of this. You know, they've been connecting back to their homelands
for a long time.
And in fact, I remember some time ago, one of the when I was doing some work with Coda Victoria, our problem was trying to get some migrant communities to listen to local news rather than always, you know, they knew exactly what had happened in their village at home, you know, who'd been involved in a car accident or what was happening, but trying to say, you know, it would be really good for you to be connecting with local news as well. So it was, so they've really shown us the way to keep connected with family and communities over that distance. I want to just ask each of our panelists, we know to actually have a society that is fully participating, older people need to have access to digital technologies and they need to be able to use digital technologies, and hooked into those two terms is this, the breadth of work that we've been talking about today, about the way hardware and software and peripherals are designed. We haven't touched on cost, but of course that's sitting there. At the heart of it is purpose and independence and social connection. So we need to think about what are some of the steps. We've given some strategies at individual levels, but I'm wondering if we can expand our thinking. And if you could perhaps, you know, if you were the benign ruler of the country that dictating with kindness, what would you want to see done differently to ensure that older people are part of the digital world going forward? So I'll just give you a minute or two to ponder when you do take over the world with kindness, what that looks like. And I'm also going to ask everyone on the conversation today to just comment in the chat function about something that you've heard today that interested you, something that was new, something that you'd like us to follow up. Any comments that you'd like to make, we'd really like to hear from all of you, for those that have access to the chat function, about something that today has either meant to you or you've learnt the first time or you'd like us to follow up. So Coral, I'll start with you. If you're running the world with kindness and trying to ensure that older people are participating in the digital world, what would you want to see done differently?
I'd actually like to see that conversation taking place at a national level or maybe an international level, where through a whole range of different mediums or media, people are talking about being inclusive. So it can be being inclusive of nationality, being inclusive of people's differences, being inclusive of elderly people. Elderly people also have they're a huge font of knowledge, which is often disregarded. And I think we could talk that up in a whole range of different ways and try and be more inclusive and kind and have that as a part, it would become a part of our thinking more if it was brought to the forefront more in conversation and in media of all different types. Probably. Terrific. I'll pass that over to the others.
Yeah, so that national conversation. Rod, what would you like to see change?
Look, I think I'd like to see a greater emphasis, you know, from a national point of view in terms of policy, but instigated at a community level, of finding the carrot, if you like, the motivation for older people to increase their ability to communicate, whether this be in time of COVID or not. And some of those motivational factors can be connection with family. We no longer, you know, we have a nuclear families these days. People are spread all over the place. Our kids and our grandkids, connection with friends as one gets older and finishes up in a nursing home or finishes up being incapable of travelling at any distance. And finally, connection with their interests, like U3A or whatever it might be. There are training programs in the past, pre-COVID, that have gone on through Wodonga Library, the community houses, not only in Wangaratta, but here in Wodonga, and through programs like Be Connected. I'd like to see more funding for those and more opportunity and more promotion of those programs and more encouragement, as I say, finding the carrot, finding the thing to motivate the older people to do it. And I'd like to see more trainers, whether they be volunteers or paid, to provide that service. We've had the situation where we had some funding from Be Connected, and there were two impediments to us instigating that training, or three actually. One was the cost of hiring the enough computers to run it. Two was finding someone who was competent to run it. And three was the amount of reporting, follow-up, required by Be Connected to justify having used their money, which would have had to have been administered by volunteer members of the U3A. So they were three things that made it difficult. Those sort of impediments can surely be overcome if there's a will to get the older generation more digitally connected.
Terrific. Thanks, Rod. Jenny, what do you want to see changed?
A little bit opposite to the national level running it. I think it should be a grassroots thing. We've talked about U3A, NEMA, Wangaratta Library, Digital Hub Council, all within, even if you just think of Wangaratta, all of those things are here in Wangaratta. National people want to throw money at it, that'd be really good. But some sort of, I mean, we are a hub, this digital hub here, whether it's under the umbrella of here, but using all those other, bringing all those people together, NEMA people want help, aged care people want help. And I think, even though I could care what I say, the digital hub isn't run by the Wangaratta Council, but I'm just thinking because that is such a everyday, like you said, an everyday part of life, like connected to electricity and stuff. And I think it should be one of the services, maybe that some sort of provision is made to include all those groups, whether it's a neighbourhood house or NEMA, and bring everyone together to just improve access that people can get, whether it's in a nursing home or private people. Mm-hmm. That's my magic wand to just wave around and make it happen.
So we need both, though, don't we? We need those national policies and that national leadership that set the stage, and we need the grassroots to be that, because we've described how for all of us to learn and to adapt to this rapidly changing digital environment, you need mates around you. You need people to be showing you to keep you being connected. You know, I've come out of working in an academic environment where there was always someone around who'd already used something that you could just go, hey, how do I use this? And so not having those people around makes things more a challenge. But we also need that third wing, and that's the organisations, and both private and public, to say to them, what are you doing that's excluding older people from taking part in the digital world? We're very good now at talking about inclusion, but we often don't talk about what are the actions that are excluding. We find that a little bit more scary conversation to have, because without knowing it, just the design of the way things operate exclude people. You know, if you want to go into a shop to ask someone about how to use your phone, there's often loud noise, there's a lot of music, there's not a seat that you can sit down, there's not a kitchen table. So all of those things are set up to make the shop look like it's young and funky, because that's the attitude that we take, that this is what matters. So there's work that I think that can be done by a whole lot of organisations as well. Thank you so much to everyone for being part of it, but particularly Jenny, congratulations on your first Zoom meeting. I'm so glad that you got one in during the pandemic, given many of us have had many. So thank you. Thank you, Rod, for giving up your time. I know you're a really committed U3A president and contributor. So I thank you for that. And Coral, thank you. You've had such grounding experience in community, working with people and understanding their needs. So I'm so grateful to you for sharing your experiences. Thank all of you for joining us. We hope this is the start for age-friendly Northeast Victoria to have regular conversations about things that matter, so that we can all grow up and grow old in a world that is age-friendly. A reminder, if you want to add anything to the chat function about today, we'd be really grateful for those comments, and we'll certainly feed back to all of you a brief report on today and provide you again with all of those links as well. So if you haven't got them now, we'll make sure that they come out to you. So stay safe at the moment. Keep washing your hands, wear your mask, keep socially distant, get vaccinated, and take good care of each other. So thank you very much for joining us.